Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
So, what's happening? We kind of skipped last time because we did our cool presentation summit recording. So we haven't actually talked together for the podcast recording for a couple of weeks now.
And somehow managed to get through it without me. But I listened and I loved it. And I'm sorry I had to miss it.
Hey, we all said hello. It was great.
You gave me a shout out.
And for those listening, Nolan will be making an appearance without Sandy. It's a couple episodes. We had a couple of other recordings and we got one coming up.
We had a boys recording.
I'll talk because this one actually relates to the presentation summit. I met Kim Hoffman from Akron, Ohio at the presentation summit, and Kim's one of our regular listeners, so thank you. Nolan, Sandy, I don't know about for you, but for me, it was just awesome to hear the people actually like listen to this conversation.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. It was a joy.
Stopping in the halls. And
okay, so Kim kind of caught me off guard because I'm from San Diego. I used to live down near the beach, surfing, rollerblading, flying kites at Mission Bay, whole thing. So anyways, she listens to us regularly as she does one of her favorite things, or one of my favorite things I should say about her was listening that she listens to us while she rollerblades and always wants more show notes because, she can't take notes while she's rollerblading. So my question is how do you rollerblade in Akron, Ohio in February? I'm not sure. I know the weather patterns, but it was awesome. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Kim.
Nice. That's what's happening for me.
Ken as well. So I had something that came out of the summit. I was talking to Jamie Garosh, who was moving to the US, actually. He's from the UK, but he's an add-in developer. And I'd mentioned an idea for an add-in that I've had for a while and that I would love. And we talked about it for like a half hour. And then a couple of days later, after the summit, he sent me a prototype. At the summit, mocked something up, really quickly. So we've been working on it for the last week, going back and forth.
Fantastic.
And it's the first time I'm not doing any of the coding, that's all him, but we've been going back and forth on it. And I'm really excited because it's going to be a very, very useful plugin for me. And hopefully it will be for some other people. We'll tell you more about it when it launches and it'll be free and all that kind of stuff. So
So let me jump in on the add-ins thing. While you were there, did both of you get talk to John Wilson and get his little get the new add-in set from him and the demo?
Yes.
No.
Okay, so here's the story, Sandy. It's basically, if anybody wants to do it, we'll put a link, PPT Alchemy. He has a new set of tools out there. Some things are amazing. Mm-hmm. Nolan, you didn't get to see the PowerPoint guides thing.
He actually automates
generating real PowerPoint guides at slide or master slide level that is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It's this whole list of tools. And I go, hey, how about if it does this? And he goes, let me make some notes. I go, well, could you do that? He's like, well, yeah, this is the starter set. That's why I only sell it for $40. It's all these incredible tools. Because then when somebody says, I said, well, yes, we can do that as a custom tool for you. It's like his marketing right there is like, mm-hmm. Of course, those are options available. Let's work with it from there. So he made a couple of different notes from my conversation. I'm not going to see the fruition of it, but somebody will at some point, or maybe we all will.
So long story short, I need to drop John an email. Is that?
Yes. Yes, you do.
Okay.
Yeah. If nothing else, just for the PowerPoint guides, because I know you make use of guides, and he has some very, very smart tools for automating, adding guides and stuff. Sandy, what's new with you? Well, what's happening?
So first of all, I believe Jamie's last name is pronounced Grok.
Oh yes, I knew I was gonna get it wrong.
I've always said Jamie G from the UK, but Jamie now I can't G. do that whole line.
Sorry, Jamie, if you're listening, I apologize.
No, it's so funny because I practiced pronouncing it when I was with him, and I happened to see him in the airport when we were leaving, and I yelled out his name across the airport, very discreet, in the perfect Gaelic pronunciation, and he was impressed. Yes.
Jamie G.
That's safe for all of us. Thanks, Jamie. I, too, coming right off of Presentation Summit, which was, you know, I say this every year, but it was such a great, great summit. There were so many sessions I couldn't attend many yeah. of them. Just awesome. And it was like you too. It was so great to meet our listeners. TJ, for one, who's, you know, interacted with us before, and Leah, I believe PowerPoint Spice. Mm-hmm. Just to name a couple. It was really yeah. great. So that's what's news. I do want to remind everyone that the Presentation Guild has launched its second annual salary survey. And I know, Troy, that you actually posted a blog on it. Thank you so much.
I did with a reminder that I could not find, because I had to contact you. It closes October 23rd. For anybody listening, because you're going to be getting this the week yep. prior, mm-hmm. salary survey closes October 23rd. I had to ask because I had the inside contacts.
Very good. Thank you so much. So we'll post that link in the notes to make sure.
Definitely.
Otherwise,
Absolutely.
Just go to the Presentation Guild site and you'll be able to find it. Yep. Oh, shoot. What was I going to say? I just want to remind everyone, too, that this is for everyone that touches presentation, whether you create them for your own use, that you're an admin, you do this for a living.
I sent the link out to producers, executive producers, producers, TDs, everybody I know, all show site graphics ops and designers. So I'm trying to expand the information flow because I think it's a great tool.
Troy, that's great. And it's only going to help us in our industry, to elevate the industry and to help each and every one of us. We have stories of people using last year's salary survey to negotiate salary.
That's my favorite story. That was a big takeaway from the summit this year. That's pretty nice.
Anything on the technical side? New news in PowerPoint land?
We've got, what do we got? We got an update for Mac PowerPoint, which the Microsoft people were telling me. I think they were making me think it was larger than it was. But it's an update that includes now collaboration through OneDrive, Quick Starter, media trim, so now you can trim videos, which for some reason you couldn't do before, and some more stuff with Designer. So that's in the latest update for Mac. And again, I don't know if it's fast, insider, slow, medium, whatever, but it's here. So if you don't have it, you'll have it shortly. Probably the biggest thing in that for me is being able to trim video now.
There are some There are some definite differences between Mac video use and export and Windows use and export. And that's mainly because it's OS driven more than anything. But yeah, it's I'm pretty excited that things are getting in continuity. Sandy, anything else? I got one more.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, this one's new only because, well, it's news for TLC Creative Services and kind of for me, I'm kind of relieved. It took two very long international flights, but I finally had time to sit down and map out a plan for my blog, thepowerpointblog.com. And I've already filled out the calendar with posts through the end of this year, which sounds like it's a great accomplishment. But the reality is we already had stockpiled almost all those blog posts. I finally just got around to saying, here's where they're going to go and everything's being posted. So the new plan for me is, it's two posts per week, which is kind of down from the three per week that I've done for 2017 to the past 9 years.
Wow.
So with the addition of this podcast and, I've now been doing some Facebook posts. I'm doing some LinkedIn articles, at least one a month now, a little more long form. You know, I just had to keep things in check. So we're doing two posts a week on the PowerPoint blog, and it's pretty much set through, we've already mapped it out all the way through March. So I'm working on April, May, and June topics, you know, kind of general themes, but pretty excited. Lots more. Those are the bite-sized tips and tricks and a lot of cool stuff.
You should be. So can we talk about the video discovery that you made while we were at Summit?
Yeah. So this was kind of a surprise discovery I was actually standing with Dan, one of the main Microsoft program managers, and myself. We're talking to Taylor Kroonquist, who had just done a great, Nolan, what was the name of his session? The one that just, you know, quick tips to blow your mind type of one.
Something to that effect. Taylor, if you don't know Taylor, nuts and bolts training, we'll put up We'll put a link in the notes for it. He is all about efficiency and like hacks and things that you didn't know about. And as you're going to say, Microsoft didn't even know, right?
Well, apparently he had made a reference to something about video across slides. And I said, well, that doesn't work. I wanted to know what version. So I actually went up to him and said, what version of PowerPoint are you working in? So here's the backstory before I say it. You have to go back to PowerPoint 2003. You could set a video to play or continue playing across slides, and it would. And it was more of a technical limitation of PowerPoint that we were kind of exploiting. Because what really happened, if you remember back then, video was not embedded, and it used a separate video player and was literally a layer on top of PowerPoint. So the area around the PowerPoint was preserved, and the video was playing on top of it. So that's why we can never have content on top of a video. It's one of those reasons. Well, fast forward to PowerPoint 2010, videos became embedded and content could be on top of videos, which is amazing. But the model broke. You couldn't make the videos play across slide because they were embedded. They are actually a part of the slide, and slide and PowerPoint's a slide level thing. Well, now all of a sudden, fast forward to some fairly recent update. Taylor said he's been using it for like the year at least. And we're back to the same thing. If you tell PowerPoint to play across slides, it puts it on a legacy video player, is my assumption, and it does the same thing. It plays across slides again, which it hasn't done for a while. So literally, he said this in front of a Microsoft project manager, myself, and we both in unison said, that's not possible. He said, but it is. I'm doing it. So I promptly went back and tested it and went, well, it does work. But then, unfortunately, it's not all so good. I do have a blog post. It should be actually, you know what? It comes out. This comes out on, this is a Tuesday release. It's either the Tuesday or the Thursday blog post. It's called Video Across Slides. It does work, but there are some big limitations because we're using a legacy video player. Things like you can't crop a video. There is no adjusting the first frame. There is the poster frame. There is no distorting the video or changing the aspect ratio. You cannot use 3D perspective. You can't use the active reflection because all those are gone. The legacy video player doesn't recognize those. So you can end up with kind of a mess if you try and do it. So here's my recommendation. I list this in the blog post. One, it's very cool. No, it works again. But two, it is literally a bug that we're exploiting again, and it may disappear. So if you choose to use it, which ironically I just did on this project in Spain, we had a technical limitation where we couldn't run an external clock on screen. I said, okay, ironically, I can do it because of a new bug, which really didn't translate well, I got a feeling, but we made it work. You would want to test it before you do it live anytime because this could disappear with any update is my feeling. It could be around for a couple of years. It could be around for a couple of weeks. That being said, hi, Dan. It all works. We've been conversing back and forth. Hi, Taylor. You actually pointed out an amazing bug that is kind of bringing us back to a legacy, and I'll have a blog post about it later this week. So yeah, kind of a cool new feature that's not really a feature. It's a bug.
Nice. Yeah, when I took that one away, but I also took away a ton of new shortcuts. I'm not a huge shortcut person, but Taylor always finds them, or I feel like some of these aren't even documented, but he's got some amazing stuff. So I definitely took lots of that. Yep. And he's got a new way of dealing with broken links and charts where
that was amazing.
There were a couple ways to do it, but this sort of new way of basically getting back your data and in about three or four steps, you can have a new live chart.
I was convinced it wasn't going to work until I saw it.
Can you repeat it? Because I didn't get to see that. Or do you think that's we should wait?
You know, there is going to be a lot of sessions going to be video hosted, or if they're not already, I got to look it up. And this is one where it's much easier to see, explain than to say it. But it's pretty cool. It's taking a linked chart and basically extracting the available data, building a new chart, and you've now got an editable chart.
If you don't know, he's got a pretty nice YouTube channel. He's got, you can subscribe to his training. It might be. Not everything is up there for free, but he does has a whole series and training series of videos and things that you can subscribe to, and it's well worth it if you're looking to get more efficient in PowerPoint.
Okay, here we go. Topic of the day. Well, life and being a professional is a matter of learning from experiences. And sometimes those experiences are mistakes. Not going into many personal mistakes here. We are talking about business mistakes that we have seen, been a part of, possibly created. This promises to be, an insightful conversation. because one of Nolan's suggestions as we were brainstorming, and I am quoting here, is, quote, physical violence towards clients. So can't wait to hear that story.
I don't think that was, I think that was a little tongue in cheek, but now you've got me thinking because I've been doing this a long time. So I'm really trying to think back. There's certainly some times I wanted to.
So the way we're going to approach this this one is it's basically each of us has stories. We might interject or give input, but it's not a, like, hey, here's a topic. Let's all talk about it. We each just kind of listed off our own stories we have in front of us. So we're just going to kind of roll them out here. So here we go.
All right, I'll start. This is not a specific story because it's just many, many stories. But the overarching theme is basically trusting a client, you know, trusting a client on timing specifically. And, you know, I feel I have gotten better about this. But over the years, I felt like Charlie Brown where, you know, the client swears, I'm going to have it to you on Thursday, And so I get set for it. I get my designers set up. I get them scheduled and I'm waiting for it. And Thursday comes around and nope. No, sorry, we didn't get our act together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at worst, or at best, it's, oh, we'll have it for you tomorrow. At worst, it's, oh, yeah, we decided not to do the project at all after having all those conversations and not even bothering to tell you. And it's just, you know, so these days I feel bad, but especially with new clients, you know, with existing clients where you've worked with them over and over and you kind of know, you can actually deal with that. Like, okay, they're late, that's fine. But new clients, I will not schedule design time until I have the content in hand. And I just went through that this week because especially new clients who are not, you know, you're not familiar with their process. They're not familiar with yours. When they say, I'll get you an outline on Wednesday, you don't know what they think an outline is, even though you have conversation after conversation. Mm-hmm. So I say, I will not set the design time up. And this gets into, you know, when it's a real rush job, you know, it gets complicated. I said, I will not set the design time aside. So we may not be available until I see the content. Because I've just gone through too many situations where the outline they send is something to the effect of, and on these slides, I'll talk about strategy. Like, and they think that's enough for me to work with. And I
okay,
have to
I'll
explain.
Make up your strategy.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. What are you talking about? Yeah, so that's the big one for me.
Okay. Well, mine is...
Totally agree.
Mine is a trust thing too, but I'm going to end up owning this, I think. Here's what happened. My situation was not following up with internal client creative. This situation, as you know, I work on an annual conference. It takes up 8 months of my year. 6 months out away from the conference, I had designed the conference template for breakout sessions and for keynotes. And I turned that over to internal creative, having consulted with them along the way, turned it over to internal creative because they were responsible for creating all the Troy, I don't know what the term is, screen backgrounds, the big images, you know, that are, it's my slides, my presentation would be picture in picture with that as a background.
Okay, yeah, we generally call it it's a panorama, it's an ultra wide, it's the mat, there's a lot of different words for it, but basically it's the larger image and you're going to sit on top
of it. Exactly. So the point there was I turn over the template and you create a background that allows me to project picture in picture, presentation over the background. I did not follow up on that. And not until the day before, the weekend before the conference, the on-site pre-show, all of a sudden we're projecting background and my slides and you can't see the slides because the background does not contrast.
No contrast. Yep,
exactly. It was awful. It was very stressful. The client at one point was saying, you need to change all your slides. I know. But good thing, and this is something I think you would probably end up doing, the on-site producer ended up coming up with a solution for the background that allowed my life to be easier that weekend.
Oh, very nice people to work with usually graphics are the people that get thrown under the bus just because we're actually there and can make changes. But that's an experience to learn from. I always ask for, if I'm not designing them, I ask for those. I ask what the positioning of them. Mm-hmm. I ask how we're going to frame them out. I actually ask for like a room plot and all kinds of other things so I can look at more of the technical details, sight lines and everything else.
I had all of that. I had all of that. What I did not see was the final background. And, you know, we never assume, right? and had I checked in a month earlier, it wouldn't have been an issue. I guess I thought them having my template and sample slides along the way that they would be able
they
to figure it out.
They should reference those, yes.
But
they
my bad.
Well, for my first one, I actually started a little bit simpler than the two of you. I kind of went with like a rookie move that I, because, you know, we're mistakes, learn from your mistakes. But the problem is it's a rookie move that I just did myself like last week. So I was like, oh, top of mind. So here it is. Let's, you know, opening up a master presentation and making, you know, a smaller executive summary deck, which is kind of what I was doing. You know, hey, here's the big deck and the executive wants to talk to these three in his offline meeting. Okay, great. This, that. Do it all. Control S. Mm. Save over my only copy of the master presentation. Mm. Which I realized after quitting PowerPoint, which means there's no control Z undo. Whatever else is needed to make those original slides is now just gone. And in my case, it wasn't absolutely detrimental. I was overseas, so I didn't have a lot of, I didn't have a really good internet service where I was working. Right. It was more the Wi-Fi. I did have a copy of an earlier version on our server. It just took me a little while to get to the point where I could get it, but such a rookie move. Always do a save as soon as you open a file. You know, not a template, because templates can be POTX, hold on. What's a template?
POTX,
yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, POTX versus PPTX. You know, and that'll make you have to do a save as. And in this case, you know, as soon as you know you're going to make a change to it and you need the original, just do a save as, because it's a rookie move and there's a mistake. And I know it. I talk to everybody on our team. I laugh at people that do it, and I did it myself.
Similarly, well, I won't save. I'll work 2 hours on a presentation and not save.
Well, and saving all the time, because you never know when things are going to crash.
Yes.
Right. I mean, Dropbox and Time Machine have saved me many a time when I had to go back to a previous version. But I've got a question, because PowerPoint's now got autosave, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now this is something you can turn on or off, right?
Well,
but
kind
I'm not sure what the default is. Kind of.
Well, so it's on the QAT bar, but
do you know what
figured
the
it out.
Story with it is now?
Okay, every time I turn it off, it's a one-time thing only. If I turn it off if I want to do save as, then I can save as. But the next time I come back into the presentation, it's on again. Maybe there's something in the back end that I haven't found yet, backstage, I mean. But it's good, well, but it's clumsy.
You know, I need to follow up on it, because it's not listed in the PowerPoint options save area. There's nothing about autosave in there that I've seen.
No.
But what's interesting is, and this is not on just my computer, it's on all the computers in TLC, and we're all under the same Office 365 accounts, is autosave is on there, but it's listed as off, and I don't actually know how to turn it on.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, it's the same on the Mac. It's like grayed out, and I can't.
Oh my gosh, I can't turn it off.
But wait, Sandy, you're on the advanced, you're on the Insiders Fast, or whatever we're calling it now, right?
I'm on fast on one and slow on the other.
And you see it on both?
Yes.
I might have to. We have a call coming up. I'm going to ask about that.
Yeah,
I've been waiting for it to become active, actually, Nolan. So yeah, the autosave thing didn't save me. And actually, what's funny is on the Windows, we have the equivalent of Time Machine. If you turn it on, if you're on Windows 10, it's turned off by default. I wish I could remember the name of it. And I didn't have a copy of it in that little repository for whatever reason. So yeah.
You know what? Okay, so I just realized that on my Insider Fast, it's grayed out. I put content in, and it won't turn on. Autosave won't turn on. So
I just haven't really taken notice of it, but I'm going to be more attentive to it now. I'm waiting for it to become active. Maybe it is. Who's got another oops mistake story?
Back to live shows. How about accidentally deleting a slide right before showtime? And this happened at a big, and I, you know, I had a team. I don't honestly don't know if I did it, if one of my designers did it. It doesn't matter. But you know, when the speaker is feverishly making, you know, edits, you know, insert this one, delete that one.
Right.
You know, something's gonna go wrong. When you're doing it. And so we did it. There was one speaker. There were a ton of speakers. We did it. One slide, you know, went missing. And so up on stage, it was like his, let's say, fifth or sixth slide. We got to it and it wasn't there. And instead of just moving past it, it became the whole theme of his presentation.
Is that one going to be here? Is that one going to be here?
Exactly. Right. Oh, you know, design took that one away from me.
But when I write a book for presenters, it's going to be never do that. Just go with it. No one knows. And
the thing is, it's not because it was embarrassing for us, because it actually wasn't. It ended up being embarrassing for him, because that's the only thing people remembered. And it totally buried his message, when if he had just ignored it, nobody would have cared or even known. So,
okay, similar story. Now, I actually wasn't there. It was one of our other graphics ops on site. This just happened. And this is more about presenters, I guess. But apparently we have two show computers always running the same decks in redundancy. So you could always go to the next computer for whatever reason, go to the backup computer. Apparently, this particular deck for this executive, the first four slides were identical. They were kind of like, you know, the first time it was a setup, then the second time, I'm taking a guess, it was like a summary and then expanding on it. So, you know, everybody kind of clicked through the first few slides, set it back to slide one, presenter got on stage, gets to slide five, and it's different. And it was like, hey, that slide, this is the wrong deck from stage. And apparently, now, that wasn't bad. They're, you know, instantly go to the backup computer, you know, talking over commas like, hey, I got it. I know what the problem is. Just go to the backup. It's got the right deck. We, you know, we loaded up the wrong one on the primary, but nobody caught it. Okay, everything's calm and, you know, we're on the right deck within, you know, literally 9 seconds. But the presenter did the same thing. Now, I'm not sure where we're going to go with this presentation. So hopefully this is the right deck and we're going to go, continuously brought it up. Again, it's probably more speaker vocalizing their nervousness that things didn't go straight through the way they wanted, but you know the audience doesn't know unless you make it a theme.
I agree.
Nolan, what about hidden slides? I'm always paranoid. Every time we get a deck with hidden slides, I call it out to the presenters. Hey, just so you know, this slide's hidden, and half the time it's that shouldn't be hidden. And other times, I know.
And the newest interface, I mean, it's been around for a while, but when Microsoft redesigned what a slide looks like when hidden in slide sort of view,
is
awful. You can barely tell that it's hidden.
Yeah.
I like what Keynote does is it literally collapses it into a little bar. You can't see it at all.
I don't like that because we're often using slides and we're referencing them
for reasons.
I just want a big. Now if you go onto my blog, you can just type in hidden slides. We actually put a ping image across it that says hidden. So if you print it, you see a big watermark hidden, but we do the appear disappear animation thing, Nolan. So if you call up that slide, you never see that ping.
That's smart.
That's my solution, but it's all manual.
I can see wanting to see it there, although I'd love an option for both, but you gotta do more than.
Well, now the thing that Keynote does do is they don't count hidden slides in their page numbering on the, when you're in slide sort of view. So you can say how many, because I mean, if I get a 50 slide deck and there's, 14 hidden slides, maybe they're slates for me, like naming a video and stuff, but I'm always doing math. Okay, wait, 50, we're on 30. So that's 20 minus these four. So that's okay. We got 16 slides left, or however. Keynote definitely makes that easy by renumbering things.
Yeah.
Sorry, this is about mistakes, not cool things of other programs.
I love it.
Who has a story?
We've talked about this before, and I think my mistake, and I made this more than once, is not saying no. And that comes either in the form of taking on too much work, taking on the wrong type of project. You know, there's that gut feel we've talked about before. Gosh, maybe I shouldn't take on this. It doesn't feel right. Or the wrong type of client. You know, that first call, oftentimes it's not the right client. And I'm pretty good, but golly, I've done it again lately, and I just question my
we've all turned one down yesterday, which I would have been a mistake had I taken it, but it's also a matter of capabilities, because we do more than presentation. We do print design and like you try, and we do some identity and other stuff. I'm way up front, and I say we do not do digital. That said, every once in a while we'll do a MailChimp template for
digital?
An existing client, because we can't.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Like no websites, signage. No mobile, no nothing. We don't even stray that.
Okay.
No, I'm not sure I've ever been asked, but there are things, that I might have told you guys of last year. I think I had an option to do like a corporate rebranding.
Oh, the branding. Yeah.
Yeah, for an agency, and at the end, I just realized it could have been cool had I, been a different kind of company. But at the end of the day, I just said, yes, we could technically do it, but mm-hmm. no, it's going to be too stressful. It's going to take away. And
it'd be like Sandy, one project takes up 8 months of your year.
Yeah.
That's not a bad thing.
It's not, but if that's not the way you're set up,
no,
you know, if that's not your business model, then that's not going to work. And also, you know, sometimes it's nice to like stretch yourself. And like one of my clients wants me to do a print ad for a newspaper, which is cool. Like, you know, I've done a couple in the past, but it's not the main thing. But yeah, sure. You know, I'll do that. That's cool. That's different. But at the same time, if it's something that's too different, that's going to take up more energy and more time because we're good at what mm-hmm. we do. We can whip out a presentation. But if it's something slightly different, Is it worth
the learning curve? You know, like you said, it's great to stretch yourself a little bit, but
learning. You can't always charge clients for the self-education that you need to get up to speed on something.
Okay, speaking of up to speed, how about this one? SVG vector file format is so much better than EMF, but being an early adopter is not good if the client cannot use the superior file format. We just had, I think I may have mentioned this one before, but it keeps coming back to haunt us. We did a large corporate template rollout and we used SVGs throughout because they were on Office 365, but it turns out not everybody in the company is on Office 365. So suddenly they're getting ping images and we had, you know, the SVGs were made to be recolored. You couldn't recolor them and, you know, resize them without quality loss because they're ping images. And
So
we rebuilt that whole template. When we figured out, and they were handing off the template as well. A lot of third party vendors were using the same template and they were, oh man, I was all over. We were troubleshooting Mac PowerPoint 2011. I was like, we can't troubleshoot. You need to upgrade. You, sir. No. They were on 2008. Okay. Sorry. They were on Mac 2008 Office. I was like, you need to upgrade to even be in the conversation. Like, this is bad. But anyways, we rebuilt the whole thing with EMFs and pings. So it works great. It's kind of more of a, we just called it the legacy version. It's literally in the file name, you know, blah, 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 template. _ legacy. So everybody knows what the difference is.
Mine was not nearly as bad, but it was a learning for me. And that caused me to be very, very cautious about SVGs. It was a conference. I started using SVGs. I made sure that they were running Office 365 on Windows 10, but one computer in one breakout session ended up running Windows 7. And the SVG, even though they had Office 365, the SVG did not work with Windows 7.
There's legacy. Hey, if anybody's curious, if you have SVG capability, just go open up any presentation, go to insert. If you have an icons, which I think is really funny, it's a little duck and a leaf.
I think it's great.
Who uses those for an icon? But anyways, the icons, all the icons that come with PowerPoint are now SVG based. So that means you have SVG capabilities. That's the way we've figured out how to talk to somebody over the phone and troubleshoot. Do you have this? Like, is this the problem? And as soon as they say, I don't see it, we go, okay, we got a problem.
And now you can ungroup those.
Oh, I forgot about that. Shapes.
Oh, yeah.
So does that change some of the calculus? Now, you can't ungroup in imported SVGs yet, right? Or can you?
It is for Mac. I don't think it's for everybody. I think it's only the Insider Fast equivalent still. Okay. I'm inserting one right now just from the icons. So I should be able to ungroup an icon. I'll do a little record because that's...
Yeah, you can definitely ungroup the built-in icons.
I cannot. And I'm on a... Because I'm on an enterprise install, so I'm on Insider slow. So I don't think that's rolled out to everybody yet. But it's coming. I mean, because the Insider Fast computer, you can do it. So, you know, you can recolor and do all that fun stuff.
But then it ends up being a shape. That's cool. Yeah.
It's just like EMFs. When you ungroup an EMF, you end up with all the shapes. Right. What's actually really cool, though, is that you can do gradient-filled SVGs. That's why they're one of the reasons they're superior to EMF. But the gradients actually hold up in their shapes. I mean, it's really it's nice. Yeah, I'm looking at it on my main computer here, which is the equivalent of Insider slow, and I cannot ungroup. I just now discovered. But anyways, SVGs, super cool. They're just not super reliable for the whole world yet. And it's just being an early adopter. And we made a mistake and assumed that we knew all the facts.
Who else? We have to have made more mistakes.
Well, I know we're going to talk about templates. I know we probably all have to. Okay, everybody has templates.
Okay, here we go. I'll jump in. You know, the big mistake is always too many layouts, which, you know, you always, yeah, I don't know. We tend to.
How many is too many?
I don't know. I think more than maybe 20, 30.
Okay.
I don't know. No hard number. But I've got a template that we created a couple years ago for one of my clients, and I have to keep using it because it's good, I guess. But whatever their main accent color was orange. That was their logo. Great. But accent color one was that orange. And for some reason, accent color two was a different, slightly darker orange. And I don't know why. And it bugs me to this day because there must have been some reason and I let it go. But it really bugs me now because some things are in the dark orange, something in the lighter orange.
It's because you love orange. You were okay with it at the time. Like, that's orange. Let's let it go.
Maybe it was meant for text, but it's just confusing because the users don't know which is which. And
could it have been a PowerPoint version thing that changed the orange?
No,
I'm trying to think.
We did it. No, we intentionally gave them two versions of orange, and I don't know, and because there's not two versions in their color palette, so I don't know.
Okay, well, here's my template mistake. I will make, not on purpose, the edit to the slide layout versus the master. Oh, yeah. And then you know what that does? That breaks the relationship. So, and sometimes you're too far down the line to undo, and it's a pain.
What else? So,
what do you got, Troy?
Well, the one I was going to, I know I've got one similar to Sandy's. I'll think about it here in a minute. But you know, you can set your default shape attributes. You select shape, right click, say save as default. We set those for every template, as I'm sure everybody does. Well, working through a large template, we changed at one point the default to be our green box notes. So neon green, fill, centered black text. You know, it's basically like, hey, we got to pay attention to this. And we had so many notes going back and forth. We were adding these notes instead of manually formatting. Somebody along the line, probably me, I don't know, just, you know, set that as the default.
That is a default. Oops.
But on our sample slide, it shows the default. Like, here's what your defaults are going to be. Here's your line, your text box, your shape, this, that, and the other. We released it with that default. Yeah. Neon green. Every time somebody put in a shape, a circle, a rectangle, a square, anything but a text box, it was neon green. They had no, the green was not even close to the corporate color schemes we had worked with.
Yeah, that's okay.
Essentially, we released something that we made a mistake on, and we did figure it out, and we kind of had to sheepishly release a new version. And the only difference was literally right clicking on a shape and saying make default.
Yeah.
But that's why template creation is a little frustrating for me, because there's so many checkboxes and so many things to check, and any one little thing just ends up in the wild.
But we have a QC process to check all those things, but it had been checked and there was revisions after it's checked. Then we go back and check it. And it was one of those ones where we thought it was done, but it probably went on for, I don't know, a month more of, you know, 20 rounds of minor revisions, which were all good and important. But yeah, one of those things that escaped us. So it was a mistake. Template mistake. I'm sure there's more template mistakes.
There are. One thing that a couple of times I've forgotten to preserve the master, which is so frustrating because
the little thumbnail tacky
pin, a little pin. Yeah.
So explain what that is, because I'm sure a lot of people don't even know what that is.
Okay, so when you're creating a template in your masters, you don't want layouts to disappear. So you've created all your layouts, custom layouts, standard layouts. And then you've associated slides with them, for example, in example slides. So what happens is if you do not preserve your master, when you delete a slide that's associated with a layout,
disappears. Only slide that uses that layout.
Yes. And it's exactly that layout disappears. It's gone. And so you have to literally go in into your master and preserve the master or masters.
Is it right click on it?
I thought the layout stayed, but that if at any time no slide used the master, the whole master disappeared.
True. The whole master will disappear, but it's a way of Microsoft kind of, you know how when you import a whole bunch of slides in that don't use one of the default Microsoft template, I'm just going to use a snip.
Gotcha.
You know, all of a sudden it creates this string of 50 extra, you know, auto-built layouts. It's its way of saying, oh, you did actually make that a layout, so now that it's not being used, I'll get rid of it. If you don't preserve the master, if you don't use that master at all, the master and all the layouts will disappear. If you don't preserve the master, but some slides are used. It'll get rid of the others. Sandy, totally identify. Is I actually want preserved by master, not master slide, but layout level. So you can say, these are the ones that I really designed. Everything else could go away because it's kind of an all or nothing. But you got to right click on, it's kind of hard to find. You got to right click on the master slide and find that. It's called Preserve Master, right? And that's a little thumbtack.
Yep, exactly. But why? Help me understand the logic for that not being the default.
Especially on master level one.
Yes. So
every inserted master, you think, you know, when you open up a new template, it's not there.
We
have kind of a starter template and we've preserved it. So whenever we start, we have it there. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll go along the exact same lines though, and that's preserving the Microsoft defaults of the layout. So as example, the one I'm thinking of, the client wanted to add subheads, subtitle headers, you know, so you'd have your title, you know, title and content, but then they wanted a subhead underneath it, slightly smaller, different positioning, all the good stuff. So, you know, we set it all up, but what we did is we keep the original Microsoft layouts and then we add a second set called title content subhead or title subhead, you know, whatever we want to name it. It doesn't matter what we name it. The key is you want to keep the original Microsoft ones because, and this is what happened, we set it all up. We distribute it. I mean, everything's been approved. We distribute it. So within a week, we get an email from the client saying, hey, the template's broken. So we're trying to diagnose it. And we're just not seeing the problems. Of course, we're working from the version we sent because that's the version they have. Turns out the client deleted all the unneeded layouts. So the title and content, we don't need that because we always want the subheads. So they removed it. Well, within a week, everybody's taking all their old slides, dumping them into the new template. They have title and content Microsoft layouts, and it doesn't have anything to map to because they removed it. So now it's creating all these just random layouts for them, which is what we were just talking about, preserving and not preserving. If they would have kept it in there, it would have mapped to the Microsoft title and content already on the template. All the placeholders would update, and then they could update it to change the layout to say, we just didn't do enough client education. Actually, it was in our training slides of how to do it. We just didn't educate the person distributing it that those are really important. We know you're not going to use a title and content, but they're really important to have in there. Otherwise, things happen. I mean, it got to the point where they, you know, the client was saying, we're not going to pay for it. It's broken. Everybody's complaining. We're wasting money. We only figured out when we got a version of theirs back. We said, well, what happened to all these layouts? They're important. Look, when you do this. So then they got sheepish and said, mistake of communication and a mistake on the client's end of removing stuff that, you know, a professional agency said you shouldn't remove.
Right. Exactly.
Templates are temperamental.
Anything else on templates?
Well, okay. I have one last thing, and this is something I just realized recently. Do you remember, was it PowerPoint 2013 when Microsoft came out with that odd size 10 by 5 widescreen?
Yep.
So a client came to me from a 2014, loved the template I built for them that, what is it, almost 4 years ago, wants to freshen it up. And I open it, and I thought I better check. And seriously, it's that size. I just don't think at this point, since they've created, they were early adopters of widescreen for corporate template. So they've been using widescreen for years. There's not transition from standard to, you know, 4.3 to widescreen. So I really think I'm going to have to stay at that wonky size.
I mean, the aspect ratio is correct. It's just a matter of making it work with other files and, making them work.
Right. So since they've been using widescreen, I think I'm just going to stay at it. But anyway, or stay at that size. It's just something I didn't even bother checking way back when. I probably didn't even know to check.
It's come up a few times for us too, Sandy, and it's kind of it's like a legacy mistake. It's like, well, do we convert you off the legacy? Which does work, but going forward, you're going to have more.
Hey,
I know we're running today. We only had a limited amount of recording time, and I know my notes. I have more stories, but let's kind of do a wrap up here. Sorry, everybody. We've got so many mistakes you could learn from, but hey, let's do this. We all make mistakes. Sometimes it's funny, you know, other times it's kind of that slap on the forehead of stupidity realized. And hopefully there are very few times where it's just a truly agonizing issue. A speaker I heard did make an impact on me when they had made this statement, and it was kind of their theme of the talk. And I get to hear all kinds of corporate presenters, but this one was really good. It's, you know, learn from mistakes. Better is to learn from the mistakes of others. And hopefully your mistakes are not so bad. Some of ours we discussed have not been so bad, or you can learn from the mistakes of others and avoid them. Hey, as hosts of the Presentation Podcast, we hope this conversation helps you learn from the mistakes of others, namely us, and at least have some comfort, if nothing else, in knowing you're not the only person out there that makes the mistakes. Okay, so we got some pro and tech tips. We're going to run through these because they're always so fun. And I got a really cool one. If you guys are okay, I'll start off.
Sure.
So, I mean, I am always transferring files around. And now at the office, we have our networks where, you know, we're able to connect to every computer. We transfer around. But when you're out and about, or as example, last week when we were at the presentation summit, you know, everybody uses their USB sticks, and hopefully everybody's using USB 3 because it is way faster than USB 2, and nobody should even own USB 1 anymore. it just takes too long for even small files. But here's what I found, and this was, I got to give credit to a video editor that turned me on to these. It's called UASP. It's a USB 3 enclosure. I think you can actually buy, you know, drives already formatted in there, but the ones I bought were actual enclosures, and the enclosure you need for is the letter UASP. It is a USB 3.0 enclosure, but it copies files literally at least three times faster than any other USB 3.0 drive that we've owned. It's, and this is kind of funny, I'm calling it a new old school because the S in that stands for SCSI. Does anybody remember SCSI drives?
Oh, yeah.
Bernoulli's and Zip Drive, all this stuff. Well, it turns out SCSI had a huge throughput. There wasn't enough technology to push it that far. So for whatever reason, the little connector from the hard drive to the USB 3 port on your thing is actually a SCSI enclosure. I don't know what to call it, but all I do know is that we put SSD drives in these and it is crazy fast. You know, we're moving 20, 30 gig video files a lot of times, and it's just so awesome to watch it copy. So we're on a computer, somebody plugged in their standard USB 3 drive, said it was going to take 33 minutes to copy over, which actually isn't bad for that. Plugged in the exact same, or copy, plugged in this UASP drive, external enclosure to the USB 3 port, same thing, 9 minutes. Same exact content being copied off to an external drive.
Nice.
I mean, I will put a link on there. I'm really big on the, is it StarTech? I think it's StarTech. They're like $30 for the enclosure. It's just crazy worth the investment.
So what kind of, this is like the SSD. That's like the laptop.
It's actually an enclosure, and we're putting SSD drives in. So we're putting the fastest drives we can get in it. I actually have a bunch of little ones. They're the little, like your MacBook Pro has what's called an M.2 hard drive, which is an SSD, but it looks like the little gum stick hard drives. All the computers we're buying, they come with a 128 gig drive. We're upgrading those to 512 or 1 terabyte. So suddenly I have all these 128 gig little drives. So StarTech makes this little teeny enclosure that's USB 3 enclosure, and it's pretty cool. So we've been carrying those around. So it's really, really small, really cool. I'll throw some Amazon links on there because
That's great.
It's a very cool pro tip if you move big files around.
What do you got, Sandy?
Mine is simple. I just want to remind folks out there that the Presentation Guild has a YouTube channel where you can access Julie Terberg's Inspired by Design, Microsoft's 3D or Morph sessions. Just check it out and see if you can't find something that'll help you in your design efforts.
I have done it several times. Just go to YouTube, type in Presentation Guild. Yep. They'll all show up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Cool. Mine is the Noun Project plugin for Adobe, specifically for Illustrator. So I've been using Noun Project for a long time, and for some stupid reason, I didn't realize or didn't go ahead and install the plugin for Illustrator. So what that means now is, now you do need the pro account for Noun Project, which I think is like $40 a year. Mm-hmm. But once you get that, you get a little panel. Once you install the add-on, you get a little panel in all of Adobe Creative Suite. But in Illustrator specifically, you get it. You can now search all of the Noun Project, keyword search. It's pretty quick. And once you find the icon you want, one click, and it now appears on in your document as vector. So instead of going to the website, downloading it, bringing it into Illustrator, opening it, exporting, because my workflow is to export and then get it into PowerPoint as shapes, I can do it all from Illustrator. I can, you know, pop in, you know, 10, 12, 15 icons all at once into one Illustrator file, export to PowerPoint, or actually export to Keynote and then PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. So it's just saved me tremendous amount of time, and it's
Nolan,
great.
Is that not available? I know your tip is around Illustrator, but are you using that in PowerPoint too?
I am not using there is a Noun Project plugin we should mention.
Hold that
Thank
conversation.
You.
We're gonna have an add-ins one. We'll talk about it there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But no, there is one for PowerPoint, but this is specifically for Adobe Creative Suite.
Okay. I did not know about this, Nolan. This is huge. I'm going to be looking at it because I am.
Now, the weird thing is in InDesign, it brings in a PNG in Illustrator, and I don't understand why. So like just the other day, I wanted a vector in InDesign, but I had to open Illustrator to do it and then copy it from Illustrator to InDesign.
Does it, because you know, all of Adobe now, when you download stuff, it wants to put it in your cloud library versus your mm-hmm. computer, or it's embedded or linked in the Illustrator file or Photoshop file. Do you know if it's doing embedded?
That's
good.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, it just comes in as vector points. I mean,
okay, good.
It is.
Well, like when you do in Photoshop, the object it puts in mm-hmm. is the new default is to make it cloud-based. So it goes into your Creative Cloud account.
Yeah, I see.
It's editable only if you have that computer linked up to that account. Well, we're handing files between designers and often going, hey, I need this linked file. Like, oh, okay. All you gotta do is right click on it and say embed, but we're now saying that up as our default. I was just curious if third-party tools. I'm going to play with this, Nolan. Thank you. I did not know it was available, and we use the new Noun Project a lot. Hey, thanks for joining us. This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, design studio team focused on presentation design. If you're looking for presentation messaging, design, show site graphics ops that are real designers, check us out at tlccreative.com and the blog now in its, you know, it's actually in its, it's in a lot of years, www.thepowerpointblog.com.
What is it in dog years? This is Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. You can get a lot of free downloads and goodies there by subscribing. And if your organization is interested in customized training for data visualization or presentation or both, give us a call.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website at presentationwhiz.biz, which, by the way, it's a newer site. I upgraded a few months ago. So if you want to take a look at new samples, check that out. My blog is also associated with my website. Or just search for Sandra Johnson PowerPoint in your web browser and you'll learn all kinds of things about me.
Yeah, for Sandy, it's .biz. Just putting it out there because I always come up with that. Hey, this site's still available. So it's presentationwhiz.biz. It rhymes. That's how I always remember it unless I mistype it. I'm like, oh yeah, the rhyming thing.
Thank you.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.